Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
You know, when I was watching Gladiator 2, I was looking at Paul Mescal's physique. And I was thinking, God, this guy looks like he was hewn from rock.
Yeah. I wonder where this is going.
Much like a statue or monument.
Oh.
Very good.
Very good.
Which is another thing we talked about.
Yeah, we talked about monuments. And here's some more stuff about monuments.
Yes, and not everyone was quite... interesting responses to who they thought the fourth...
Henry did
have some replies yet.
Well, this morning on Patreon. So Henry drew a picture of what's it called, Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, Mount Rushmore.
But with the three of us beans as the presidents, and then of course as the fourth Mount Rushmore person.
Yeah,
And Henry drew someone in there on Patreon this morning. The first one was, "Is that Russell Crowe?"
Okay, good.
Oh, really?
On the topic of crows, by the way, and crowbars, yeah.
Which is correct, right? That's what you're
Yeah, that
going
is what
for.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
And then someone said, is that Ill Ben?
Someone said Ill Ben. Someone's also suggested, where is it? Where have I lost
Hang
it?
Hang on a minute, Ben. Is it possible that you're one of Russell Crowe's thousands and thousands of illegitimate children? It does look like you're turning into Russell Crowe, it would seem.
Someone also suggested Johnny Vegas. Somebody wrote the word bastard, which I think implies that they think it might be Sean Bean himself.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that's a good point. It could have been, couldn't it?
I mean, yeah.
It doesn't look that much like Russell Crowe.
I assumed it was Crowe.
Caricaturing is a specific skill, but it's more like impressions for an actor. So it's not a proper skill, being able to draw something that looks like someone is like doing an impression. As an actor, I'm an artist, so I'm therefore not very good at doing things that look like people. That'd be like doing an impression rather than being an actor.
So it's, but also, actually, to
it's,
be
a
fair,
low, it's a lower art form.
To be fair,
if anything, not being good at it is actually suggests that you're better as an artist. Than
to be fair to you, Henry, you are having to draw Russell Crowe not just as Russell Crowe, but as a kind of bean-shaped Russell Crowe that's also
hewn from rock.
So there's quite a number of sort of steps.
Yeah. My hands were tied. I had a few. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
That's also been there for many years and been, you know, eroded slightly by sort of South Dakotan
and that comes
weather.
Across, doesn't it, in the drawing?
Yeah, very much so.
I think what it is I don't associate Russell Crowe with having longish hair like you've given him. I think of him as having the sort of gladiator hair.
I always think of him as longish hair.
I don't know why I've put
That's my baseline is longish hair.
I think I googled some photos of him and I must have seen one with longish hair.
I think he's got longish hair these days, for sure.
Jumped out.
Mm. Yeah.
What he has is hooded eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So caricaturists, they look for... specific.
How big your nose is, usually.
How big your nose is. If you've got a big nose.
Get ready for an even bigger nose, because that's what you're getting.
Because they exaggerate. Obviously, a strong visual feature like Mike's moustache is a gift to a caricaturist. You basically, you sort of can't mess it up. Someone like me, I'm bald, which is quite handy for caricaturists. I've got strong equiline features, noble nose, aristocratic chin.
So did you say aquiline or equine?
I don't know what that means either. What does aquiline mean?
Aquiline, isn't that like Roman nose feature?
Yeah. I don't know, just thought it sounded good.
Hmm.
So one feature which the other thing is how close your eyes are together or not.
Yeah.
What's one of the big ways to identify someone, and obviously you massively exaggerate it. I think Russell Crowe's are quite close together. I think mine are quite average. Ben's are quite average. It's hard to tell with Mike because of all the optical illusions going with the moustache and stuff. It's almost impossible.
It's like a hall of mirrors.
It's a hall of mirrors.
You can't look from one eye to the other without looking at the moustache first. It destroys all the angles.
So when you're looking,
the
Mike, it's always hanging. What do I look at? Do I look at his left eye, his right eye, or the moustache? Can I look at his right eye with my moustache? left moustache with the left side of his moustache. Yes, very hard. It's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's why the illusion, you create the illusion of depth, don't you? Of having a three dimensional head, which of course.
<don't>. So monuments.
So I had I had a couple of interesting experiences over the weekend. Hmm? One was, if you have the thing where you get a compliment off someone, that you don't know, and there's a nice little warm moment where you feel, you bask in the glow of this compliment. And then that person then goes on to let themselves down in a way that completely undermines the initial compliment and sort of removes it.
Did Bashar al-Assad say he liked your glasses?
The ex-Syrian dictator?
Yeah.
It wasn't that. In fact, actually, it just doesn't really tie into geopolitics at all, this story.
Okay.
You'll be surprised to hear.
It's just how I think about the world. Okay, carry on.
I was on a line bike, waiting at a red light.
Can I say, good for you.
I know. I was actually just thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah, good on me.
No. Can I say, that's just what's expected.
Observing the highway code as a cyclist. Very good. When I cycle, I observe the highway code and I pay voluntary road tax. Thank you. Don't accept it, but that doesn't change it.
If anyone ever cycles past you or breaks a red light, you always shout to them, Rainsworth! I bet you're one of Rainsworth's progeny. You should have been my son. You can come round for Christmas if you want.
I've bought you a train set! It's a fancy because I like the livery.
Right. I was sat on my bike at a red light.
Yeah.
Or stood on my bike. Okay. I was stood.
What?
The twist already.
Do you sit or stand on a bike? No, I sort of stood around my bike.
Yeah.
Because I was at a red light. I was astride my bike at a red light, respecting traffic laws. And a man walked past in front of me. And he came, and I shouldn't be doing this, by the way, I was listening to my headphones.
Oh, Henry.
And he said, you know, there you go. I said, what? And I took off my headphones. And he said, this is his exact voice. He said, you look like Ben Fogle.
What?
Like that.
You really don't look like Ben Fogle.
Oh, I steady on, guys. Steady. Whoa, 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 whoa. Sometimes me think someone protesting too much about me looking like Ben Fogle. Maybe I do look like Ben Fogle if you're protesting that much, because I don't see why you'd protest that much if I just didn't look like Ben Fogle. It feels like probably I do look like Ben Fogle, and you've got an issue with it, because probably neither of you do look like Ben Fogle.
Unless you were wearing your Ben Fogle cycling face helmet, of course. In which case, fair play.
It's the safest way to protect your head, Mike. Think about it. Ben Fogle's never had a major head injury and he's come up mountains. I was in Mountain Warehouse and they said to me, you could have one of these normal helmets or we could take you around the back and give you one of these Fogle ceramic headsets. They're brilliant. And anyway, I said, what? And he went, you look like Ben Fogle. Like that. And then he walked off. All right. And so I had just had enough time to think to myself, you know what? It's a nice feeling when someone says something like that to you. Ben Fogle's a good-looking guy. It's like a warm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my initial thought was, I definitely don't look like Ben Fogle. But then I was like, maybe looking like Ben Fogle is partly an energy thing or like a vibe. Mm. Or maybe I do look like Ben Fogle. Maybe I look so much like Ben Fogle.
That you don't look like Ben Fogle.
Or that people have just assumed I am Ben Fogle, which is why no one's ever told me I look like Ben Fogle.
Going incognito.
Well, you wouldn't say to Ben Fogle, you look like Ben Fogle. In fact, he's the one person you'd never say it to. So
are you thinking, am I Ben Fogle?
Maybe I am Ben Fogle. Maybe I look so much like Ben Fogle that to point out my Ben Fogleness would be like telling a dog that it looks like a dog. You know what I mean?
Maybe I have rode the Atlantic with James Cracknell.
I do feel a bit sore.
Maybe I have fronted some Outward Bound TV shows.
We should just explain to sort of foreign listeners who Ben Fogle is. I feel like he's probably quite a British celebrity. I don't think he's travelled. I mean, he has travelled. That's his whole thing. Yeah. But I don't know if he...
Household name.
Household name. He's a kind of explorer. Did he set up the kind of... Did he invent the kind of Stranded on a Desert Island TV shows or something?
No. He's like a pretender to the real throne of Bear Grylls and Ray Mears. And he's just a posh bloke.
Okay. Handsome.
Ray-fish. Raffish? I don't know who say that.
Bit of both.
Both. I'd always go Rafe.
There's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, he's...
Basically, I think the British public really like watching a posh bloke go for a walk, and that's kind of what he's made his career out of.
Posh people don't have to worry about getting frostbite, fundamentally. That's why they make good explorers. If you're not posh, and like you do a job like with that involves your hands or your ears or your nose, then you're in real trouble when you get back from the Arctic and something's fallen off. Whereas if you're posh and you just inherited millions, it's just not a concern. If you've got nothing left of your left arm and the right side of your face.
You don't need to make a cup of tea. You don't need to tie your laces. You don't need any basic functionality.
You're not driving yourself anyway.
Because of your toothbrush moustached ramrod up his ass father and the way he's brought you up, you are both, you're so emotionally dead. That has actually extended. Sometimes that extends to finger neurons. You know what I mean? Like everything's just you can end up just not really feeling anything because you don't feel emotions.
Yeah,
because of your ramrod strict dad.
After emotions, the next thing he loses is the ability to sense temperature, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, both emotional and physical warmth.
Great.
Become meaningless.
Quite. So off he trots, your Fogel.
You look like Ben Fogel.
Yeah.
Big pardon?
Carry on.
I had that brief moment of like, when someone pays you a compliment, maybe something a bit unexpected as well, you're like, oh, what nice. Oh, maybe. Oh. But then already in the back of my mind, very quickly, there was this, and there was another voice saying, maybe you should just check out that guy. Because maybe just double check that guy, yeah. Just double check that guy. Just see if there's anything about him that's a bit off. If it's okay, you can rubber stamp the compliment, take it on board, and increase your self esteem slightly, and it goes through.
Could he have been a Hungarian spy? And you look like Ben Fogel was the kind of phrase.
And you were meant to say, he's looking for his assets. He's trying to find his Handley. Exactly. He's lost his Handley. Just walking around London for hours on end. Ah, no, I can't remember what the rendezvous was.
Because you were meant to reply. Yes, and you look like Steve Redgrave.
Am I supposed to be like sort of infiltrating MI5 or something right now?
I think so. I think you're supposed to be downloading the database of the Ministry for Fisheries and Agriculture as we speak.
You know, I'm just remembering he also did give me a mysterious looking briefcase. I should have mentioned that.
It was strangely heavy.
It was strangely heavy, and it contained a Ben Fogel, a fake Ben Fogel beard.
With a fuse.
With a fuse. He looked like Ben Fogel. He carried on walking, so I thought, I'm just going to check out this guy. It's a nice compliment.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have. I looked after him as he was walking up the road, and I was like, oh, of course, yeah, just my luck. All I needed was to see a man walking up the road, and I'd have gone, great, yeah, I look a bit like Ben Fogel. And I looked at him, he was walking off, and his trousers weren't properly, they just weren't, you know, they weren't at the correct height. There was something about the trousers.
The wrong thickness of corduroy.
No, the corduroy thickness was fine.
Yeah.
Basically, the trousers were sitting halfway down the buttock, and there didn't appear to be any underpants.
Okay.
So essentially, I was looking at sort of 4 or 5 inches of arse crack, and that's enough for me. It just erases the compliment. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, fine, I don't know what that guy's story is. I hope he's well. I don't know what it is, but you just look at it instantly. Fogel gone. I've had Fogel for 3 seconds. It's gone. I've taken away Fogel. I've given you. It's gone. You don't look like fucking Ben Fogel because that guy's trousers aren't. He's just doing something with his trousers, which isn't traditional. So
yeah, is there something else that he refers to as Ben Fogel? For example, the bit of the arse that you can't see. We don't know, right?
Yeah. So you might have been saying to me, you look like a lower arse crack.
It could be. I mean, not that I think that about you, of course, but...
No, thanks. Of course not.
But at the same time, you do not look like Ben Fogel either.
No.
You're somewhere in between the two, I'd say.
I mean, is it possible, though, that... I suppose it's possible that a person could not be in control of their trousers, certainly in a traditional way, that society... But at the same time, have a fairly strong sense of what's when someone looks like Ben Fogel or not. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it possible that why those?
Yes, I don't know. Does trousers one of your faculties? If you're in control of your faculties, is trousers in the list of faculties? I don't know.
Is it possible that to this man you looked so much like Ben Fogel that his trousers fell down?
And his underpants exploded. Because there was a lack of underpants as well. Because the pants are like, if the trousers had just been low and there had been underpants, I think I'd have thought, yeah, that guy has a strong sense of, who looks like Ben Fogel or not, and needs to buy a belt. But it was a two. Or if he'd just been wearing underpants, I'd have been like, I might be able to think this guy has a strong sense of who looks like Ben Fogel or not, and has forgotten to put trousers on today, potentially. But it was both. It was the fact that it was the combo. Although, having said that, people, who's to say? I mean, I think I actually almost have this thought very briefly before then dismissing it. This is all in the time before a red light changes green, by the way. But which is that maybe just because he's wearing trousers in a strange, why am I suddenly judging him on this? Also, society can change its attitude to things. And the first, an early outlier, the first person to do something isn't necessarily respected. You know, like maybe this guy's has a radical way of thinking about trousers.
This guy's Van Gogh.
Crumbs.
But anyway, yeah, so that was,
wow, what it,
was
a
sort of, it was just sort of, I've just had this lovely little door open to me. You know, it's just something's too good to be true. It was like a little door open and a golden light shone through.
Fogel.
And then a big ass crack poked out through the door as well. I was like, yeah. That's just an ass crack, isn't it? I also, actually a bit later on, I realised that I was wearing my kind of slightly Arctic looking coat and a sort of,
oh, that's what he meant.
And a wintry sort of beanie. Okay. I thought, and I had a bit of beardy stubble. Probably it was a combination of just I was dressing like Ben Fogel, and this guy,
and maybe you do look like Ben Fogel.
So maybe I actually do.
Yeah,
we're still not sure, are we?
I think I'd like to see you in your Shackleton get up at some point, please. No.
Okay, and then we can maybe put it to the test.
Do you think Henry looks like Ben Fogel? Please email in.
One of the key moves when you're about to be sick, which is something that you learn in adolescence, is to go toilet, not bath, isn't it? Because if you're sick in the bath, it just makes worse problems for everyone.
Do you learn that, or do you know that from birth? I don't know if you...
Did you have that instinct? Did you have that preloaded?
I think that was preloaded, yeah.
So do you think that's nurture, not nature, that knowledge?
I think that was part of my gene makeup, yeah. I think I understood.
Was that of your part of your sort of DNA starter kit that you got from your forebears?
I think so.
It was in there.
It's ancient Polish.
Early on, the sick sort of target is sort of down your mother's back normally, isn't it?
Mm. Yes.
So it's mother's back.
Mm-hmm.
Move on to father's back.
Sibling's face.
And the back seat of a Peugeot 405.
Headmistress's support stockings.
Yes, ideally in the middle of a carol service.
Then, of course, there's font, isn't it?
Yes.
Font, hymn book, clergyman's shoe. And, of course, eventually, up against the inside of the window of a taxi cab. That's one that we all
and
go
And the
through.
Only thing after that is down your mother's back once again, isn't it? It goes full circle, eventually.
That's life, isn't it? Everything comes full circle. And eventually you're in your, you're in your 40s being cradled by your mother. Everyone's crying because it wasn't,
You're peeking down her back, she's peeking down your back.
They thought they'd done everything they were supposed to do. there were saxophone lessons, pony club, the works.
Yeah. I mean, I can play the saxophone while sitting the wrong way around on a moving pony. I can do that. but it's basically all I can do.
So, Mike, have you definitely been to Cork?
I've definitely been. I toured there.
Ah.
I did some of my stand-up comedy there.
Oh, lovely.
And I had a lovely time.
You played to a massed audience of 250,000.
Exactly.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. At the Mountain Warehouse Plex.
Because he put up all those posters saying, Pope today. And when they all got there, it was just Mike.
Well, Mike announced himself as the new Pope, as a PR thing.
Well, he said that the Pope was going to be doing a gig.
Oh, I see.
But it was
yeah.
Mike doing the gig.
Yeah. And I came on and I said that I was the warm-up act for the Pope. So they didn't leave. Yeah. It's very crafty.
And a lot of them hated what you did so much they actually renounced their Catholicism, didn't they?
Yes.
It was one of the biggest mass renouncings of Catholicism that ever happened in Cork, wasn't it?
I have the amount of correspondence I've had to deal with since. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah. But the irony is you actually had to become a cardinal, didn't you, to deal with the amount of de-Catholicizing that you actually had to become a cardinal to actually...
Well, because the local cardinal had themselves renounced the faith.
Had completely renounced.
The knock-on effects were legion.
Yeah.
And that's what the film Conclave is about, isn't it?
That's what the film Conclave is about.
Disappointed not to have been given a role in that.
Yeah. Well, Stanley Tucci plays Mike Wozniak.
Yeah, better than, yeah, they, at the moment, they're saying he plays a better Wozniak than I
they
could.
They are saying he plays a better Wozniak than you.
Yeah.
And he also, the advantage he has over you, which is he likes Italian food like a lot. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen any of his TV programs, but it's extraordinary. He really, really likes Italian food. It's amazing.
And that's what they generally eat, isn't it? Because Vatican food is rubbish, right?
Yeah.
Holy See cuisine, absolute tosh. So they order in a lot from neighbouring Italy.
They've got a tie-in with John West, so they put tuna in absolutely everything. Can we have a little section of this show, Three Bean Salad, called Stanley Bashing, where I just have a go at Stanley Tucci a bit or not? I've just got an issue.
It might have to be a separate podcast. I think that sounds like an Owlfuckers venture to me.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's more. I'll put it in front of Eamon. Of course, I'll put it in front of Eamon. Put it in front of Eamon.
So in Conclave, Mike's played by Tucci. I think Ben Fogle plays Henry. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then I'm just Plemons.
Yeah.
Plemons are sweeping up the bits.
Well, no. You're just a computer upgrade in it. So it's just one scene where someone goes, "Have you got the Partridge? Have you done the Partridge update yet?" And they go, "No, I haven't bothered." And they go, "Yeah, you probably shouldn't bother."
Yeah,
and that's it.
It's in the director's cut. Plemons is amazing. He's the only actor that can play two different colours of smoke, isn't he? That's why he was booked. Not many people are up to that.
That's true.
In camera,
yeah,
extraordinary.
And of course, he got into character. So, like, all day he'd be red smoke. If it was a red smoke day,
the famous red smoke. That's what they do when it's the display pope, isn't it? The aerial display pope.
Yeah.
when he's about to be launched.
Is it not red? Is it black or white? What is it?
It's black or white, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or grey or white. Is white smoke the new pope?
I can never remember which way around it is.
And what do they burn?
The last pope.
And all the documents.
The documents relating to his murder. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a great two-in-one, isn't it? They solve two problems at the same time.
Yeah.
But on a day where Plemons was playing the black smoke, on a day when Plemons was playing the white smoke, he'd be in character, even in the catering truck or whatever, you'd try and talk to him, and he'd be like... Do you know what I mean?
You're doing an impression of smoke.
of Jesse Plemons doing an impression of smoke, yeah.
I'm really sorry. That probably didn't necessarily punch through on our audio medium. I'm sorry about that, listeners, but it was quite a thing to behold.
I don't know. I just find the whole thing quite confusing. How do you make a bronze cast, Ben? Do you know?
Yeah, you make a statue as normal.
Yeah.
Then you make a cast of the statue.
What's that mean?
That's the Vesuvius bit.
Okay, yeah, you encase it in something.
Yeah, and then you pour bronze, whatever, into the cast.
Can I say, like, three steps ago, as the from the artist's point of view, I'd be like, I'm not going to do this. I can't be bothered. I'm going to pursue a different career. Sorry. There's no way I'm going through all these steps. What does it matter?
Also, are sculptures fundamentally better than drawing? You may as well just draw them.
Exactly. I think drawings are better than sculptures. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm always amazed that there are artists who do both. So, like, Michelangelo is obviously a great painter, and then he just made really good sculptures as well. It's like, that's a totally different discipline.
It's true. I reckon it's harder being a sculptor, because there are some tricks of the trade you can do, which I can let you in on. If you can't draw hands, have everyone with their hands in their pockets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or have the whole thing being seen through an aquarium in the foreground, for example. And then the fish can be covering the hands. There's just ways around. you use perspective. If there's stuff you can't do, you put a big elephant in the way, or like a fun character, just pegging the head in. You know, like
just the old towel, isn't it?
Or just a towel, because drawing a towel is incredibly easy compared to sculpting one. Whereas as a sculptor, there's nowhere to hide, is there? Like, it's so three-dimensional. You can't have the guy... You can't have an incredibly hard to sculpt an aquarium foreground. Do you know what I mean? there's nowhere to hide. It's got to be exactly right. So I think that's quite difficult.
Yeah,
I respect that.
Amazing.
Here's the thing about monuments that I quite like. Sometimes I'll be walking through London and I'll find myself at a famous monument. So this happened to me recently. I was actually on my Lime bike. I found myself in Pudding Lane.
Yeah.
It was the middle of the night. I was hungry. I just put pudding into Google and it turned out it was a mistake. It's just the name of the street.
Yeah.
So is that where the Great Fire of London began?
Yeah. And there's a big monument there, right?
Yeah.
Which is...
To fire.
There's a monument to fire, which is actually the second hardest thing to sculpt after towels.
Oh, hang on. Is this the monument?
Yes.
Of monuments, yes. Tube station fame.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's the what?
It's the monument.
What do you mean it's the monument?
As in, that's why Monument Tube is called Monument, because that's where the monument is for the Fire of London.
Oh, it's literally the original monument is what we're talking about.
Because it's a funny monument, isn't it? Because it blames the Fire of London on Catholics, essentially.
Oh, right. Does it?
Yeah, it says there was like a surfeit of papish fury or something. And it blames the Pope, essentially. When all it's
a famously dry sort of fury, isn't it? It's dry and hot.
That was before inquiries, wasn't it? You could just, and also if you basically, what's the word? I didn't mean etch. What's that when you write on a sculpture like that? Basically, if you etch something onto a monument, in those, it just became true, Betty, didn't it?
Yeah.
So I've looked it up. It's not Popish fury. The quote is Popish frenzy.
Blimey.
The Popish frenzy which wrought such horrors is not yet quenched.
Good Lord.
So the fire is out, but the danger has not been averted because there was still Popish frenzy.
But what I enjoyed about being next to this monument, and you could try this with monuments, anyone can try this with monuments, is there's this little moment where I sort of realised it's just me next to the monument.
Mm.
Have you ever had that when it's just... I think I've had it at the Cenotaph before as well, where you go, I'm just walking past this thing and it's just me. This is a kind of perpetual historic... kind of icon of something, this monument. Yeah. But right now, it's just Henry Packer here. Have you ever had that feeling? Is that a
solipsistic view?
Would that be linked to some sort of... I'm now picturing some expert sat behind one-way glass going, we, it's true, we are dealing with a psychopath. We are. Yes. Yeah, we gave him the monument test.
We stood him in front of the monument. Yeah. With a crowd of extras, he didn't perceive a single one of them.
No,
Ben Fogel and Nigel Havers strolled through at one point. He didn't notice.
We're going to have to encase his prison within another prison. One prison is not enough. That this man is so dangerous. In fact, we're going to have to Anthony Gormley him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean, though? Come on, guys, surely. Have you never had that? Maybe you don't wander around monuments in the middle of the night as much as I do.
I'll have that, but I need it to be more ancient. Do you know what I mean? With sort of hands that have touched on something that's...
I'm touching the ancient stones.
I'd love to see the Easter Island heads, those guys. Do you know what I mean? That they're the monuments I'm interested in, where no one really knows exactly that stuff. It's too far back.
But if you ever get in front of that stuff, Mike, you'll have that feeling. Because I have that feeling. Actually, I have it as well with Van Gogh.
He spoke to you.
I went to a Van Gogh exhibition recently. Just, you know, when you're in front of a really famous, iconic poster.
See it, say it, sorted.
He invented the concept of tennis players scratching their ass, didn't he?
Yes. Thank God. But in his original, it's so emotional because, of course...
He only had one ass because he cut off one side of his ass.
He cut off one side of his ass. And also, he never sold that painting of the tennis player's ass in his own lifetime. But he wrote so many letters to his brother Theo about it. It's quite sad. His life is sad. No, but sometimes you're standing in front of an iconic painting like that, and you're like, "This is it's just me in front of the painting right now. It's just me and Van Gogh. It's like we're the same. And what are these other people walking around? They're just rats on their hind legs, aren't they? Just clothed rats."
Yeah, I've imagined them. I can unimagine them.
Exactly.
Begone.
Through strangling. When I lived in Glasgow, there's a statue in Glasgow town centre of Arthur Wellesley, first Duke of Wellington.
Oh, yeah.
Is that just the Duke of Wellington then?
That's just the Duke of Wellington, yeah.
There's a statue in central Glasgow, outside the Royal Exchange, of the first Duke of Wellington. So it's a classic big statue on a very big, impressive plinth. He's sat on a massive horse.
Yeah.
And it literally always has a traffic cone on its head. Always. Nice. Do you know about it? It's a kind of Glasgow tradition.
I can picture it. Yes.
So it's exactly always there, and it's always got the traffic cone on its head. Yeah. I guess occasionally it's removed. It's, you know, within 24 hours, it's back again.
Yeah.
And I quite like that.
That is nice. I like that. Good old Glasgow.
Good old Glasgow.
I personally don't like the disrespect shown to a man who saw off Napoleon for us.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it's disgusting. And then what was the last one?
Was it hippos?
It was hippos, yeah.
It was hippos.
Yeah, okay. So can we think of a way into that?
You know what? Paul Mescal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He looks like he's in good shape, young man. He's years off having... Oh, this is terrible, this one. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. You can't pull out of it halfway.
He's years off having a hip operation.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. That was worth pulling out of.
It's worth pulling out
of. What about some amphitheatre gladiator animal stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Did they have hippos in the amphitheatre?
No.
But they also didn't have sharks or CG baboons.
But we had hippos in our podcast, didn't we?
I still can't believe they put a wild baboon in a cage in front of Ridley Scott, and he went, that's not...
That doesn't look vicious enough.
Not vicious enough. It doesn't say baboon enough.
even though it could clearly just pull your neck off.
And it's already
single
killed,
movement.
And it's already killed my DOP.
Yeah, please CGI protein pack these baboons. Yes, everything, it turns out everything, it's all right, Pam, don't worry. They're not real. They're not
it's the mention of baboons.
They're in a film.
Yeah.
They're in a film.
Yeah, there's no such thing as baboons. Never let Pam know that baboons are real.
Pam.
Aw.
It's okay. You don't have to worry about baboons. It's a completely hypothetical issue for a vigilant. It's okay.
I think Pam's annoyed because the fact they used CG baboons meant that real baboon actors didn't get employed. And it's, isn't it? You wait, as a baboon actor, you wait for years for a job like that to come along.
Doing years of fringe theatre and...
years of fringe theatre.
Adverts you wish you'd done loads of ads and
you've done the M&S voiceover, that's a baboon, isn't it?
You got your skills up as well, even though you know how to ride a horse, you've got swordplay. Yeah.
All that stuff. You do. You work in a call centre a lot of the time, just to make ends meet. And finally, a big baboon job comes along.
What do? They CG it.
So annoying.
Bloody Andy Circus again.
Fucking circus. Who rang it all up?
Anyway, an animal that wasn't in Gladiator 2.
No.
CG or otherwise, was the hippo.
We'll have to wait for Gladiator 3.
Gladiator 3, Revenge of the Hippo.
Yeah, or Top Gun.
Top Gun Hippo.
Hippo Bomber.
Welcome, friends.
Good morning, beans. Good morning, listeners.
Welcome to Three Bean Salad, the podcast where three strong women... isn't it? Because that's what we are. They've seen a lot and been through it and share some homespun wisdom... Mm-hmm. We talk about who are the hot actors that
strong women do
that we're into at the moment.
Sounds strong women-y to me. Doesn't mean we can't have fun. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Doesn't mean we can't have fun. Exactly. And then we also do share recipes for pies and stuff at the end, don't we? Because there's no reason why strong women can't make pies as well. Do you know what I mean? That's okay.
Yeah, while stripping a rifle blindfolded. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, why not?
Exactly. And actually, maybe sharing a bit of that pie with the person you're just before you assassinate them.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've had your pie. Now it's time for the real pie. Doesn't make sense, but I was trying to think of a kind of bon mot.
It's pie and die. Mm. It's time to pie and die. You have some pie, then you die, and I escape and hide and die.
Yeah? That's pie and die, though, isn't it?
That's pie and die and die. Yeah. Look, the fact is, we're always brainstorming ideas for Netflix series that we're going to pitch, and we had the recorder on. We were recording for this one, but isn't it? We normally start the. Before we do the episode, we all bring some ideas for a Netflix series.
But it's always the same thing.
It's always
we always start three strong women.
Three strong women.
That we know that we're not going to be able to portray, obviously, but they are based on us.
And they're assassins, aren't they? They're old friends.
Pie assassins. As the series might be called.
Yeah, they could call pie assassins.
It's better than assassins, isn't it? Which did get turned down almost immediately. So we've had to repackage it a bit.
And Janet and the Quiche of Justice didn't sell.
The fact is, though, commissioners, they don't know what they bloody want. That's the thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? Because the fact is, everyone wanted, people were clamouring, weren't they, for series about strong women who bake and kill.
Yeah.
And a year ago, by the time you got your pitch together, they're now moving on to something else.
Moved on to soufflés.
Isn't that soufflés, whatever? Yes,
yeah, so soufflés and torture.
Yeah, it's so bloody hard.
And we got Fiona Bruce signed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's still on retainer, actually. I do need to do something about that standing order.
Yeah. I mean, she's making so much money off this potential series, it hasn't even been made. She barely even needs to do question time anymore.
Well, she's phoning it in, isn't she? She's phoning it in.
Yeah.
She's not really sorry, Fiona. Never say that to Fiona. I'm not allowed to say that contractually.
And don't look her in the eyes. Remember, Mike, don't look her in the eyes.
No, no, no. Only just between the eyes.
Where her actual eye is.
So, Christmas is nearly upon us. And
Christmas is absolutely, it's so nearly upon us. It's just racing at us, isn't it? Through the diary, but the other way, from the other direction that we're going, isn't it?
It's reversing.
It's reversing at us really
exponentially.
Yeah, it's reversing exponentially.
And are you suggesting that the days between the 20th and the 24th are going to be cancelled from on high by the suits?
I think they might have to be, because they're both getting crushed. They're both getting crushed from both sides. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're in that bit in Star Wars where they're in the crusher.
All right. I'm imagining the Coca-Cola red lorry reversing towards us.
That's its reverse beep, yeah. Do you think there's any billionaires that have literally got up? Because you know, like, the world's going to shit in lots of different ways, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You heard, yeah. You heard about it?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into all of them, but it's geopolitical, environmental things, all the stuff to do with air temperatures, etc. Yeah, Greek, environmental disaster.
Yeah.
Loads of
the hills around Exeter are ablaze with warning pyres and have been for some months. So we know something's up.
Bad things. So do you think there's any billionaires that have literally gone, oh, you know what, I've got enough money now to invest in a kind of just a personal escape zone place. I'm just going to live under the ocean forever.
But that is happening.
Are people trying
to use New Zealand for that at the moment? Isn't there a bit of a trend in New Zealand? Like, it's actually a bit of a problem. Some bits of land, bits of New Zealand being bought up. Proper sort of a super kind of grand designs Uber mansions being made with escape rooms and bunkers and all the rest of it.
And actually, or I think some billionaires are rich enough to go, you know, actually, let's live the rest of our lives in a the Lord of the Rings extended universe.
In an orb, did you say? Like a sort of rolling Zorb.
Yeah, well, rolling around in his orb, potentially.
Mm. Well, in which they are Sauron.
In which they are Sauron, if they choose to be. They can choose whatever character they want, but it was obviously filmed there, so get the costumes on. Let's just cosplay the rest of our lives. And then our children can cosplay it. Mm. But because obviously, presumably they've got multi-generational planning as well. They don't just want to go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
So their children could cosplay it as well. And then two or three or four or five or six generations later, essentially, you have created the real Lord of the Rings. It's actually
you've created
happening.
Middle Earth.
Yeah. You've created Middle Earth. I mean, imagine that, because it's just a parallel kind of world with people are...
Some people are shorter than others, some people are hairier than others. That's about it, isn't it?
Exactly.
Some people...
So what you want to do is get some short, hairy billionaires out there as well. Presumably they'll be trying to sort of choose...
Mm. Peter Jackson's a great
Peter
one.
Peter Jackson. Danny DeVito. Yeah.
You know that guy who is trying to stay as young as possible by, like, eating his son's plasma and stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, injecting spinal fluid from a baby into his face.
Oh, my God.
he's like a sort of proto-elf, basically, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So he could get him out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the elves are kind of in a kind of... They're in the...
Sort of immortal, but that can be killed. There's a real... Yeah. It's a real small print. They're sort of small print immortals, aren't they, basically?
That's still my favourite bit of The Lord of the Rings, when they go to the elf world and it's... kind of smooth world. Everything's made of kind of sort of like ivory. But everything's white and gleaming and it's like...
They're a bit much, though, aren't they? The elves, on the whole.
Oh, no, we've had this conversation before. Mike doesn't like the elves.
It's a bit full of themselves.
You see them as like London elites, don't you? That's why I identify with them. And you feel like, what's right? Good honest, old fashioned orc. What's wrong with them? They do a job. They know what they
do. Never seen an orc in foils, do you?
Never seen an orc in foils. They're too busy getting stuff done.
Yeah, to worry about what's on the coffee table. Exactly.
Yeah.
Real. Yeah.
You don't have a coffee table, do you? You've got a lager bucket.
Yeah. It's the same as the piss bucket.
It's the same bucket, same colour, same consistency.
This is a circular system, really.
It's a circular system. But anyway, enough about implying that people live next to drink their own piss. Enough of that. Let's get back to rendang. No, what is it?
No, rendang is a delicious beef meal you can have. Isn't it?
And mudang is kind of is as well. So... Turkey is a forgiving. It forgives overcooking much more than it forgives undercooking.
Right.
So it's a long, slow cook.
Mm-hmm. I think you're wrong, Henry.
Okay. Okay. So contradictory advice. Don't forget, my origins are. I mean, particularly with the white meats, I fear the microbes. So I will. It's more. It's very likely to be overcooked by sort of a day. I'll probably start on. Christmas Eve.
It's microbe vengeance, isn't it? That's what you call Christmas Day, isn't it? It's microbe vengeance.
It's going to be pre-boiled and irradiated, and then I'll think about cooking it in an oven.
Yeah. And you've actually got a setup at home, haven't you, with like electrodes and stuff, where you can say, this turkey has literally zero vital signs. It's completely dead. It's got nothing.
It's like the surface of Mars. There's no life.
Cannot thrive on this turkey.
Yeah, I'll be hosing it through with sterilised water for 48 hours minimum.
And Listerine. Yeah.
A little Savlon rub, isn't it? At the end, you crisp it up with a little Savlon rub.
That's right. And then it goes in the napalm fire bowl in the back garden.
That's right. And then, well, because your gravy, isn't it? It's one part stock and five parts TCP, isn't it?
And maybe a dash of red wine.
A dash of red wine. Yeah. So Ben, imagine the way you cook a turkey, Ben, I imagine is... You get two air fryers because it can't fit in one air fryer. You get sort of chuck two air fryers up against each other, stick the turkey in between, then wrap tinfoil around the gap and blast it for about 10 minutes.
And get the hell out of the house.
And then on eBay, you bought one of those electric bomb disposal things, didn't you?
Well, the suits that comes with the free robot.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a home spray tan kit, set up the little tent.
It just has to appear.
Hang it in there. And then just fire painted it until it looks cooked.
So, Mike, oh, God, I'm so stressed on your behalf, Mike. I do want you to have me on FaceTime on the day.
Yeah.
So, I've drawn a picture here, it's not good on the radio, is it? But that.
Right. You brought a sphere inside a cube. Oh, no. You've also drawn a prawn.
That's the reality. That's the reality of a prawn. So, just think twice about putting it as a starter. It's an absolutely obscene. I mean, it's just a grotesque creature.
Yeah.
That is the amount of your oven that we're taken up by a turkey.
Yes.
It'll take up almost the whole oven.
Yes.
So that's why you need to think about how much space you've got for your roast potatoes and stuff.
In the wok. Yeah.
In the wok.
Yeah.
Now, if you're wok-ovening it, so I think most people know this now, if you get two woks and invert one of them, put them on top of each other, it essentially
becomes...
It's
a bit like
becomes,
the air fryer method, isn't it? But more traditional, really.
It's a Chinese oven. It becomes what's referred to as a Chinese oven. But the important thing there is once the turkey's in, you cannot... And once the heat's up, you cannot separate the two woks, even a crack, because if you look in, the whole thing dissolves and turns into kind of slime.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of air pressure, because of the way the air pressure is
moving.
Yeah,
and the jet of steam that comes out will kill anyone within a 5-yard radius as
It'll kill anyone. And essentially, you'll end up with a kind of collapsed meat meringue. So there's lots of challenges you face on Christmas Day. So if... Because I'm a natural, you see, I think Mike is a naturally organized person, but Willie, because I'm a naturally disorganized person, it actually favors me, this kind of situation, because I have to hit it so hard with schedules and like bullet points and stuff, because I know that I'll screw it up otherwise. Whereas, Mike, if you rely on like, well, I'm a pretty competent guy, I mean, that's something, I know that's something that you like to say.
That sort of natural arrogance is dangerous in this scenario.
You've got the natural, it's a provincial middle-aged man natural arrogance. Yeah. I'm a pretty competent guy. I mean, I know my way around a petrol station. I can name
every service station up the M6. I think I can manage a Christmas dinner.
My car has not been on the road untaxed for a single day. And that's in 20 years of being a car driver. It has never been untaxed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what happens is on the day, the amount of different things, the amount of temperatures, and the amount of timings happen. Yeah. One thing you can do is you go, I'm going to sacrifice the sprouts. You just have a sacrificial, go, right. Because there's so many things you're thinking about. You just go, right, I'm going to allow the sprouts. In a way, that's what they're there for, is I'm going to fuck the sprouts.
Yeah. Hang on.
And just think.
I know it can get very stressful, but please don't end up.
People express their stress in different ways.
You need something you can jettison and kind of take off
the
table.
Have something in it where you can jettison.
There needs to be some wriggle room.
Mm. But it's the amount of different things. Do you do sausage meat?
He's doing pigs in blankets.
Because some people do all of them, those pigs in blankets. Some people do like
a cube of sausage meat.
Yeah. It's like a gross meaty tile of sausage meat just cooked. It's the fattiest thing on
the pork action will come from the pigs in blankets, and there will be, when in doubt, if I need to liven up a veg somewhere, there's some lardons are going on it, basically.
Oh, hello.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stuffing?
Nice touch.
Oh, God, yeah, because I could write this down.
Yeah.
For God's sake, Mike. For the love of God. I'm really genuinely worried about this.
Cliff Richard stuffing balls?
Yes, well, if there's a real problem, I mean, obviously there's the fat balls for the sparrows in the back garden. We can always pop them in the microwave.
Oh, they'll crisp up lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get on to dessert.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
So you're not satisfied with yogurts, even if a fruit corner in it. You're thinking there won't be space in the fridge.
Well, I think, Mike, put a few lardons in that corner bit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That would be nice. And I sort of.
I know for a fact that a member of the troop is already bringing a Christmas cake.
Okay, that's technically for a bit later in the day. I think pudding is. In Victorian terms, you'd have to have started making that 5 years ago.
Oh, yes.
For it to be authentically Victorian. Because that's the one that you leave to sort of ferment, don't you, for years.
That's very true.
And you have to stir it with a musket from the Boer War. Have you got that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that could be bought or delegated. Is it unethical to delegate the...
No, definitely delegate.
Pudding?
I think delegation is going to be the key to this being successful, Mike. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. A comprehensive, absolute delegation.
It might have to be total delegation, apart from you can maybe retain laying the table.
Occasionally barking the odd sort of crisp order that is ignored.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you can do that.
Okay.
I think probably as a minimum, as a backup, you need to buy 20 magnums.
Okay. Thanks, Ben. See, that's real world advice right there. Yeah. No one's not going to be pleased about that, are they?
And especially if you can sort of arrange it in a kind of pyramid that you can bring out on a tray.
Yeah.
The pyramid of magnums, really, I think, good. You know to live.
There's so many little problems you face on Christmas Day. One is, because there are certain things which, so one weird mistake I always make is I end up trapped, but I don't know why this always happens to me, trapped between like four different recipes for the turkey. So I take a little bit from Jamie, a little bit from Nigella, and a little bit from
Nigel Slater.
Nigel Slater.
Oh no, I think I just want to know. I don't want to know timings and weight. That's what I want to know. And with meat, I find it particularly reassuring when someone offers me a little equation, like it's number of kilos times it's x times number of kilos plus 30 minutes. That's that's what I like. I'm reassured by these things. And then you leave it to stand for, I think, 3 weeks. Is that right? Or something? Something that doesn't
make
any
sense.
Have
you got a temperature probe?
Oh.
I've got one, and it's
reverent. You do not want to know how Cliff Richard does that bit.
We... Oh, God.
God, why is he?
I'll see if I can find that. But if not, there's always this Pam's tongue. Pam's quite good at...
For fuck's sake.
Because if something is too, she's not a fool. If something's too hot, she will withdraw. If it's too hot, she'll withdraw. If it's just right, she'll start noshing off.
God.
Yeah. And you can cover that sort of thing up.
You're not getting one of the celebrity chefs, are you, this year? You've dug up a PhD about micro life expectancies.
Yeah, exactly.
That you're managing to get most of your data from.
What, I'm trying to get the microbes to die of old age?
If you can. Well, it's like slow cooking, a microbe. You die of old age.
It does eventually. It's known as attritional cooking eventually. Yeah. You can't actually kill all of them.
You slowly
destroy the food that they're besieged in.
Yeah.
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 Break
their
morale.
It is a siege. Yeah. Look, one little Christmas tip that I'm going to give you, which is to do with there are certain things in recipes I find. Mm-hmm. There are certain like grey areas where they don't. There are certain problems in cooking which have just never been addressed in a recipe. So one of them is to do with parboiling. Oh. In fact, anything to do with boiling, which is I'll say something like parboil the potatoes for 5 minutes, let's say. But what they never deal with is the fact that, say, let's say you've got a pot of boiling water on the hob.
Yeah.
As soon as the potatoes go in, the temperature of the water just drops to nothing. And it's like takes 15 minutes or something for it to get boiling again.
Yeah. So you preheat the potatoes in the microwave and then you put them in the boiling water. Yeah.
So you preheat and then you put them in the boiling water.
Yeah.
Or if it's one of those microwaves that you can move, you drop that in a huge bath of boiling water, and then you've covered both bases. Don't do that at home, please. No, but it's like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you mean.
So what is 5 minutes of boiling? Every Christmas day, I'm like, what the fuck is 5 minutes of boiling? No one has ever addressed this in a recipe book. You can't put something in boiling water, basically, because as soon as it goes into boiling water, it's not boiling water.
No, it's a good point.
So,
can someone email us about that?
Someone email us about that, please.
Next email is from Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks, Lynn.
Loving the tortoise banter, she says.
Okay.
My tortoise is 70 years old.
Wow.
Blimey. Although they are famously long-lived, aren't they?
Yeah. And is currently nestled in layers of boxes in the shed. Nice. One winter, however, she took umbrage at the new straw in her house and went walkabout. We canvassed and looked for weeks with no joy. Only for Dad's spade to hit something hard whilst digging in the veggie patch.
Oh, no.
Goish.
And there she was, alive and well.
Oh, thank goodness. So the shell did the business. The shell did what it was trained to do.
For the next 30 seconds. Okay, yeah.
No, it was fine.
Okay, it was fine. Oh, that's what the shell's there for.
Yeah. My beautiful tortoise is called Nicola. We thought she was male until she laid eggs a few years back. She lays five eggs a year and usually stamps on them.
Other than that haunting image at the end, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. So was Nicola had buried herself effectively?
Yeah,
in soft earth.
In earth, yeah.
So wouldn't have been visible to the naked eye.
No, exactly. So I wonder if that's what egg's done. If you can't see him anywhere,
buried himself.
Yeah. I reckon the stats on re-finding lost tortoises must be pretty high. I think there's a good chance that egg will come back because they're so incredibly slow. And they're good at hunkering down. I mean, they're probably the natural kingdom's premier hunker, I'd say.
Well, they come pre-hunkered.
They come pre-hunkered. I mean, they're in a hunked state from birth, aren't they?
Yeah,
hunkered state. So I reckon, I think the prospects are looking decent for.
Good. Well, this is great stuff.
I think next spring, Eggle.
Egg will rehatch. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll rehatch.
So Lynn also says that when they... So the eggs are unfertilized, which I think is why they're stamped on.
I assume.
Oh, I see, like chicken... What?
What?
Like chickens.
What do you mean, like chickens?
Were you not assuming that was... Because Lynn has mentioned that there's like a stud. She's bringing a tortoise stud in, right?
Well, I thought...
She's not... Nicola's just not going out and about into town and...
I thought the implication was she had an open marriage, this woman.
What's the woman's marriage got to do with the...
Whether she lets her husband have sex with the tortoise.
Which, I mean, would be another reason why you would stamp on those eggs if you were in your...
Yeah, right, please, if that happens, stamp on the eggs. They're unfertilized.
So you could eat tortoise eggs for breakfast, in theory.
Well, this is what she says. She says, we keep the ones that aren't stamped on and have contemplated an omelette, but it felt too weird. I think
has that been done
right.
before? Is that a known thing? Someone must have tried that, surely, somewhere.
Must have done.
Again, yeah. it's on the billionaire's buffet, isn't it? Along with
tortoise egg omelette.
Rare.
Yeah. It's definitely on the billionaire's buffet, along with the little hippo. So, what? That's interesting, isn't it? So we only eat the eggs of birds. Is that like a rule?
And fish.
Yeah, pretty much. Is it? I'm trying to think. Yeah. Like reptile eggs, you could try, but we haven't. Fish eggs, we
eat. Why aren't we eating the eggs of mammals?
Why aren't we eating the eggs of mammals?
Because mammals don't lay eggs.
Because mammals don't lay eggs, apart from the platypus. Which does.
But why are we eating reptile eggs is my big question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Do we mail in? Have you eaten a reptile egg?
I imagine they're really foul somehow. I can't imagine the egg of an asp being particularly tasty somehow.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lynn finishes with, I look forward to giving Nicola her post-hibernation cuddle.
Yep.
I'm sure Nicola is not looking forward to that, but...
But you want to feel it, will she?
You just have to sort of live with it as a tortoise, I imagine.
And a tepid bath in my pie dish in April. Which sounds a bit like she's planning to cook Nicola, but I don't think that's what she's doing.
Slow cook Nicola. Well, they're also, because they're pre-hunkered, but they're also self-pastried to a degree, aren't they? I mean, they come in a crunchy case.
They come in a kind of slow cooker.
They come in an overdone puff pastry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that was Extra Beans. Thank you so much for subscribing and listening and all that stuff.
Thanks very much.
And see you next time.
See you soon. Cheerio.
Bye.